Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So, as expected, we have learned more about the person charged now with seven murders and countless other attempted murders in the Highland Park 4th of July parade shooting. A seventh person died yesterday, adding to the death toll there. We have learned also about the shooter's interaction with police previously, his family. Because yesterday I saw that his uncle had this to say publicly. I saw this on Fox Chicago. His uncle Paul saying no signs, had no idea that he was capable of something like this. Very apologetic.
I just want to say I'm deeply, deeply sorry for everyone that lost their lives and got injured. From the bottom of my heart, I'm heartbroken, and my heart is shattered to hear this, and I can't even believe it, and I just want to express my deeply sorry and my condolences to everybody. Me and my brother, we're very well known in Ravinia, Highland Park, and we have a good character. Everybody loves us, and this is just, it breaks my heart to even hear about all this. There's been no warning signs, as I saw. I saw him yesterday evening, and when I went home, I said hi to him. And then when I came back downstairs, I said bye. He said bye. And that was it.
Cry me a river. Are you kidding me? What a non-apology apology. His nephew lived with him in the back house, and he went on in that interview, and BBM had a lot of it on their program yesterday, saying, but I never talked to him. He didn't work. He didn't have a job. You know, he worked at Panera and then got fired during COVID or let go. And I never talked to him. Well, if you have a niece or nephew living with you, you should probably converse with them to check in with them to see if they're okay. And I thought that was repulsive, what he said yesterday. 312-642-5600, turnkey debt pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. Well, he knew what he did in 2019.
Well, this is the issue.
Right.
So in September of 2019, police were called to the suspected shooter's home where he was threatening to kill family members. Police at the time took possession of 16 knives, a dagger, and a sword, according to Chris Covelli, Major Crimes, Lake County. At the time, he says, no probable cause to arrest the person now in custody.
Well, 'cause no one would sign the complaint.
But officials did alert state police about the incident. So state police were alerted about the incident, and then he turns around and gets a FOID card.
Yeah, in December, that following December.
He gets a FOID card at 19 years old. His father signs as a sponsor because he's under 21. Since no charges had emerged from this incident in September of 2019, there was insufficient basis to establish a clear and present danger and denied the FOID application according to Illinois State Police. That's their statement.
Right, but they're also called the August before because he tried to commit suicide. So they were called in August of 2019 and then in September of 2019.
State Police said the agency never received any reports from mental health facilities or personnel that would have prevented him from receiving the card. And then he legally purchased a rifle that he abandoned at the scene of the parade. Was one of four firearms he bought legally and recently, according to Covelli and law enforcement. Now that context, that context makes it difficult to make the statement. I think you heard from Uncle Paul that, you know, there was no indication, there was no sign.
Did they not watch his videos on YouTube? The last one being a beheading.
Yeah, the video thing.
This aspiring rapper and face tattoos and neck tattoos and sitting home all day not doing anything. No one helped out. Parent, for God's sakes, be a better uncle, for God's sakes. This didn't have to happen. This is another, and then the state police too. How the hell did he get a FOID card? But then Chris Covelli explained it yesterday to everybody. Well, the family would not, they called the police, but when police arrived, they would not sign a complaint against him. So whose fault is this?
Well, it's ultimately the fault of the guy who pulled the trigger. But in terms of, you know, these things are difficult to Monday morning quarterback fairly, because you want to hold people accountable. You want to say this is the way this could have prevented. But in this case, I mean, if you're not being honest with yourself and you're not being honest with the public subsequent to this, that there were a lot of indications that this person had issues, and issues that could metastasize into violence, that apparently did metastasize into, you know, something approximating violence years before what happened on Monday.
And for Uncle Paul there to say, you know, we're so loved and rejuvenated. Yeah, they had a coffee shop near the train station in Highland Park. People knew him. His brother, you know, Bobby's dad ran for mayor of Highland Park.
Right.
And yes, people knew who they were. Are they beloved now? I don't know. I mean, people are still in shock, and people, you know, there's redemption and forgiveness in life, but I don't know about this one. How he could let him live with him and not converse with him and not help him.
Well, here's the thing. Police were called to the home because he was threatening to kill family members. They believe that threat was serious enough to call police to the home.
Because he said, quote, I'm going to kill all of you. That's what it said in the police report.
They take weapons from him at the time. They return the weapons because no charges. The family didn't want to press charges. You were concerned enough to call police. You didn't think you could handle him. And then you turn around and sign the application for a FOID card. And it's not even whether Illinois had a FOID card or not. It's sort of an indication of how serious you're taking what is going on with your son just a few months after you felt like you couldn't control him such that you called police because of threats he was making against you and or family members.
He had homicidal tendencies, and they did nothing.
Well, that's something that needs to be explained. That's not something that needs to be explained, because that doesn't match up to me.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. And you had this woman, she's 22 years old, Cassie. She was with her mom, Katie Goldstein, at the parade and watched her mom die and had to run away for her own life.
I looked up and I saw the shooter shooting down at the kids. And I told her that it was a shooter and that she had to run. So I started running with her, and we were next to each other. And he shot her in the chest and she fell down, and I knew she was dead. So I just told her that I loved her, but I couldn't stop because he was still shooting everyone next to me.
And she was very appreciative for the time that she had with her mother on this earth.
I want to share how she was before she died. She was waving to the floats. Every float that went by, she waved to them. And
she was having fun.
Yep. She was just a good mom. And I got 22 years with her. And I got to have 22 years with the best mom in the world.
There's all sorts of heartbreaking stories coming out of this, as you would imagine. both parents of a two-year-old child were killed. Kevin McCarthy, 37, and Arena McCarthy, 35, both killed at the parade. Their son, Aiden, 2 years old, is okay, but now he's going to grow up without mom and dad, separated from his parents during the chaos. And
Good Samaritans took care of him.
Right.
And then reunited him eventually with his grandparents.
Right. Mark and Rochelle, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, just curious, if this guy sat at home and didn't have a job, where did he get the money for these guns and ammo?
It's a good question.
Well, he did work at Panera in 2019 for a little bit, but I don't know if that's enough money to, if you're working part-time
there.
Yeah, so. Mark, it's a good question. I wonder, too, there's some sort of indication that he had some underground success as an aspiring rapper, and I wonder if he made any money from his rapping. I don't know. But that's
possible, yeah.
That's a possibility. Thanks for the call. So I don't know what the but I think that's a good question. That's a question for law enforcement as well. Mike in Mount Greenwood.
Hello.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah. Good morning. But my point is, we've tried this liberal psychobabble for about 50 years, and it's time that we start treating criminals like criminals. I'm talking about when you go to jail, hard labor, break some rocks. If you don't want to break rocks, you don't eat. And as far as these murderous people, it's time to start hanging them, public execution, and a few of those, and it will stop. And the other thing is, you know, I don't care if you're religious or not, but if you go back and look at the Bible, the story of Cain and Abel, it tells us there's been bad people in the world forever. We've just forgotten how to deal with them.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Well, it was interesting to note that the word evil was being thrown around by politicians like Governor Spaulding on Monday. All of a sudden, a recognition that evil in this world exists. I thought that was interesting.
He's just catching on.
Kathy and Joliet.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Hi, Amy. I'm a 20-year educator, and I'm telling you, in my career, high school kids have come in with the neck tattoos. They sit in class. They act like store mannequins when they walk around the building. You can't talk to them. You can't nothing. And they'll come up with some crack statements. They'll draw stuff in their textbooks. You'll talk to them about it. You call the parents, and the parents will not sign a complaint. And if you do a threat assessment on these kids, and it's deemed they are deemed to be a danger to self and others, you can call certain agencies, and they'll be transported to a hospital right away, with or without the parents' consent. But if the parents get involved, they'll be like, oh, I'll take them to the doctor and say goodbye to
well,
that whole process.
Yeah.
Parents don't have stones. Dan, I'm telling you, the parents do not have stones.
They don't. They're afraid of something. My neighbors will think I'm a bad person.
Thanks for the call. It's complicated. And it's individually specific. The difference in this case is this isn't about interpreting art. You have to explain how you went from not feeling like you could control your kid at home that you had to call police to sponsoring him for a FOID card a few months later. God. That's what you have to explain because that's different. Dennis in Crystal Lake.
Yeah. Dan, Amy, good to hear your voices. Hey, the money he got could have been from them stimulus checks. And also, you do not, the parents do not have to sign a complaint. The parents do not have to sign a complaint if it's a domestic. That is record that was reported on a 911, and the police can take them in themselves. And
It's thanks for the call, Dennis. It's a little bit more complicated than that because the indication was that he was making threats. So if you're unwilling to sign a complaint attesting to the threats that were made, then actually, no, you don't have much of a case. So it's a little bit more complicated, which is why I want an explanation of exactly what happened and why they called police. And then what turned around over that 3-month period such that dad felt confident sponsoring him for a FOID card, ostensibly that he would purchase weapons or wanted to. That's why did he go to dad, or why did he apply for a FOIA card at 19? He was obviously right. interested in purchasing weapons. Now, the flip side of this is you heard all this chatter online that we talked about yesterday from people who ostensibly interacted with him in the quote-unquote music world, who said not a gun nut, not political, sort of engrossed in different imagery he thought was interesting, and then ultimately became a isolated stoner. And so that's something else I'd like to hear from dad and family, Uncle Paul, about what they saw from this kid, if he was this isolated stoner that he's being described, and what concern or lack thereof they had about what was happening to this young man.
The more you listen, the more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today, 773-467-5630. 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy talking about what more we've learned about the situation, the family life of the individual charged with seven murders who shot up that Highland Park 4th of July parade.
And they're expecting that number to go up because there's a few people that are in severely critical condition right now this morning.
Well, hopefully that won't happen, but it's not just seven dead. Of course, it's also dozens injured.
45 shot, Chris Cavalli said yesterday, in total. 70 rounds fired. And he dropped his rifle. He put it in a red towel or blanket and put it behind the Ross Dress for Less store. Yeah. And they're looking for a woman who called 911 to let them know that the gun was there.
And then he dressed up like a woman to blend in with the crowd, as mm-hmm. Cavalli told us yesterday.
And put on a neck scarf so he covered his face tattoos and his neck tattoos.
And we also learned that this had been planned for significant period of time leading up to the July 4th parade.
He scouted out the spots. He used the escape ladder, the fire escape ladder, to gain access to the roof, so he knew exactly what he was doing.
And then we learned, as we were discussing before Mike Scott's newscast, about the family and what they're saying in the wake of this versus the history the family has with police. He doesn't have any criminal record. The shooter didn't. But police were called to his home because he was allegedly making threats as to killing family members. Knives taken away, no charges ultimately pressed. The knives were returned, and then a few months later, dad sponsors him for a FOID card, and then recently he buys weapons. So that time period needs explanation from the family. You have to explain how you went from September of 2019 to needing police to help you maintain control over your son and safety within your home to a few months later sponsoring him for a FOID card.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. And somebody texted in, of course, Amy blames everyone but the shooter. Okay, that's fine. Ultimately, but who supplied the shooter with the weapons? And that's his father.
Well, he bought the weapons legally. He could have gotten a FOID card within the last year because he's 22 years old. But that doesn't explain why a few months after the incident at the home where police were called, he's sponsoring him for a FOIA card. And then again, the planning, the chatter online about what other people who allegedly knew him, who allegedly were in the music business with him, had collaborated with him. That's how they presented themselves, describing this person as, you know, an isolated stoner. There's more blanks to fill in. Not surprisingly, you know, we're only 36 hours removed or 48 hours removed that from this horror. And so there's a lot of pieces to try to put together to see if a picture comes into focus.
And one piece that we don't have is the motive, and they still don't know the motive. Because I at first thought, oh, this has got to be, you know, a white supremacist attacking people in Highland Park because they're Jewish. Most of the residents there, but that was not it. I mean, clearly he was spraying bullets indiscriminately just at the crowd, shooting a man who was here from Mexico, whose family member said that he didn't even want to go to the parade in the first place.
Well,
Mr. Toledo, grandfather of eight. Well, he was visiting from Mexico.
Right. We talked about this a bit yesterday. The good news is that he's in custody and not dead, in the sense that maybe, we don't know, maybe you can glean something that helps to fill in some of these blanks from him through interrogation and the legal process. We've had this before, and we've not been able to put all the pieces together. But there are a lot of contextual issues to discuss, including his drug use, which we started to talk about at the end of the show yesterday. Candace in Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin.
Good morning, guys. My cousin was a lot like this, with weapons and everything. And I think that's a boy's fascination. So we sent him to the Marines and he became a man and got married and has a great job. But there's a lot of suspect things about these cases. I don't like all this stuff. I think that, I think somehow these boys are groomed, and I don't know how, but I'm always suspect of these cases because it always happens around when they're trying to desperately get legislation through, like Jussie Smollett and the lynching bill. So I don't know. I don't know what I think about it, but I'm very suspect of it. But one thing I do think is it's interesting to me that we have a 40% increase of the vaccinated between ages 18 and 64, and Indiana actuaries are totally freaked out about it. So 40% more death in states, and yet we're consumed with a violent gun shooting. I'm going to be honest with you. I could care less. Seriously.
Well, okay.
Thank you,
Candace. Oh, I mean, these are moments that are, you know, indelible. And I understand, Pritzker, it's right to be angry about this, but it's not right to be angry about 11 dead and 72 shot in Chicago. And he's not doing a press conference on the South Side or the West Side, which he could do every weekend. So I get that. But, you know, like I remember Janina Carrico's murder when I was a kid in Wheaton, her murder in Naperville. People on the North Shore remember Lori Dan.
Yep.
35 years ago.
And now this.
You know, when you have sort of innocence shattered in a community or neighborhood you think is safe, that's an indelible moment, and it can't just be dismissed because there's violence and other societal ills in other places as well.
And also, it was a 4th of July parade. I mean, it should be a celebration of freedom, and people were there with their children and having fun. And, oh, we all know people that were at the parade with their kids. My one friend, Bonnie, she's like, I am never, ever going back to a 4th of July parade. My kids were traumatized. Another mom took a bunch of kids into a room to calm them down. They're singing Wheels on the Bus Go Round and Round. You know, these kids saw something that they only hear about on TV. They lived it. And I'm glad that no children were killed.
Jerry in Naperville.
Hey, Dan. I'm not a tinfoil hat guy, but you know, there's two things that kind of stick out. Number one is all these eyewitnesses were saying he looked very military, but he was wearing women's clothes. And if he doesn't have a record, how do they have anything to compare the rapid DNA test to? They keep saying that helped identify the shooter.
Well, they recovered the gun and they looked at the serial number and it linked them to them. And Cavalli said he put on the dress after the shooting, then escaped with the crowd so that nobody would identify him. He went to his mom's house, borrowed her car.
Yeah, okay. Stay on point. He's asking, the question is, how did police have his DNA to match it up, the DNA they extracted from the gun? Right? That's the question you're asking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. He had no record, correct?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. Thanks for the call, Jerry. That's a question for Chris Covelli. It's a good one. John in Naperville.
Yeah, two quick points. A FOID card is useless. You know, you can't even use a FOID card as a form of ID to get a license in Illinois. It's so useless. The other thing is that...
I understand that, but that's not the point of the dad sponsoring him for the FOID card.
Well, no, I agree with you. I agree with you that, you know, that shouldn't have happened. But the other thing, too, is that the common thread with all these mass murders is marijuana use. Why isn't there a class action lawsuit and big judgments made against marijuana industry? I don't understand that. You know, we could go after the guns and have these big lawsuits after tobacco, but why not marijuana? Maybe because it's paying a lot of the money in Illinois and other states now?
Thanks for the call, John. We talked about that at the end of the show yesterday. I mean, the studies about the increased incidence of psychosis among heavy marijuana users. Our friend Alex Berenson from New York Times reporter wrote a book about it. We've got study after study over the last decade, and the increased incidence of psychosis among heavy marijuana users leads to an increased incidence of violence among those who are psychotic or have a psychotic episode. Is it causal? No, we can't say that. Is there a correlation? Is there heightened predisposition? That's what the science says. Is that part of the conversation? I think it is, especially with these politicians celebrating, as John from Naperville just said, celebrating cannabis, dispensaries, legalization, all the celebration about legalization. Let's get everybody all hopped up on marijuana. That's great for the kids.
And the kids are doing that. They're not drinking. They're smoking it.
That is definitely part of this discussion. It's not the totality of it, but it's part of it. David in McCook.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, Dan, I have a question. Do you know, is this little worm looking at state or federal charges for this?
Well, state charges so far. It was the Lake County State's Attorney that was talking about the charges filed.
But John Lausch was there on the scene yesterday, the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District. He was there in FBI.
You may have federal charges. You may have federal charges layered on, depending on what the evidence suggests that would implicate federal law, but it's state charges for now.
He's probably going to end up in Stateville for the rest of his life, and he's not going to have a fun time there.
Yeah. No, he's not.
Thanks for the call.
And when
David.
He got arrested, too, he didn't find me. He had a rifle in his car, and he didn't shoot at police officers. Thank God. But I'm just saying he didn't. When he got arrested, it was no incident. They just took him away. Slammed him down on the ground first, which they should have.
Well, yeah, they had him. I mean, police on 41 did a great job, and they applied de-escalation training, and they got him to comply, so there was no more people injured or worse. Mike in Union.
Hey, good morning. Just to answer the DNA question, maybe it's possible that they took his DNA once he was in custody and matched it up with a weapon. I'm just saying, I mean, it's possible that he might have had it ahead of time, too, but I mean, our government is creating all these doubts and questions on their behavior of late, so probably that's why it's being brought up.
Here's the thing about that, though. Mine is so that then maybe the timeline is incorrect or reported correctly, because my understanding was they recovered the gun, DNA from the gun, that helped them identify the person they were looking for.
I heard it differently. The serial number on the gun was purchased by him.
Well, right.
So that's how they knew it was him. And then they went to his mom's house. Car was gone. She's like, oh, my son borrowed the car. And she was shooing the cops away, too. She needs to be interviewed, too.
I'm just thinking if it was secret that the government was doing this, they probably wouldn't advertise that they did this. Mm. Unless they're that stupid, and we know they are. So have a great day, guys.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Yeah. I mean, right. Obviously, the serial number, and they can trace back the purchase. I don't know. I like clarity on that DNA question. I don't know. We have a different understanding. But I don't know. Mike in Oak Forest.
Hey, how you doing? I'm not sure if anybody covered this yet, but I happened to be up early that morning, right after the incident, and WGN was taking in like live witness callers, and there was actually a gentleman that called in that said he actually saw the shooter kneeling on the side of the street behind a pole, and he actually shot the lady next to him, and the blood from that lady like splattered on his wife. But he actually said that he was looking in the shooter's eyes and that he was on ground level.
Hmm.
I heard that, too, from somebody that was at the parade. They're insistent that there was more than one shooter. I said, just relax and, you know, let the police do their work. But I have heard that
yes,
before.
And he described him as a military-type gentleman in, like, a perfect, like, shooting posture and everything, so...
Well,
I think there may have been more than one shooter.
Well, there's no indication of that. Thanks for the call, Mike. And, you know, I don't know, but eyewitness testimony is notoriously unreliable. You see somebody with a sport rifle, they're going to look military to you, especially if they're shooting people. I mean, is it possible that he climbed down and he continued to shoot his way out? I don't know, because... The storyline is that he put women's clothes on and he blended in the crowd to disappear rather than draw attention to himself on the ground, coming down from an elevated position. So I don't know. I mean, we can't say what that eyewitness says he saw is right or wrong, but what the police are telling us, law enforcement is telling us, what we know from the evidence as they're providing it, that doesn't sound like it matches up. Dr. Yerkes in Oak Lawn.
Thank you, Dan and Amy. Yeah, they dropped the ball. The dad, the uncle, the police. He threatened to kill his family. Mm-hmm. It should have never gotten this far. And there is a correlation between chronic marijuana use and psychosis in some cases. The degradation of family is at the root of all social ills.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call.
I talked to
Doc.
A pediatrician yesterday who said, you know, I had somebody, a kid come in, 17 years old, long hair, introvert. Said, son, what do you want to do? What do you want to do with your life? Said, I want to blow things up and kill people. And he called Homeland Security and FBI. He's like, we have to help as a community, you know, because calling the mom did nothing. And so he took matters into his own hands. He said a lot of psychiatrists don't, and psychologists and therapists don't, they know that there's homicidal tendencies and they don't do anything about it. But he, in a position of power, does something about it. It's one aspect.
Yeah, I mean, it's just when you're trying to divine based on art or something somebody says, it's the problem with all of these sort of nice and tidy explanations is there are many, many more people that present the same profile that never commit an act of violence. And this is what we were trying to get to yesterday. You know, what's wrong with our society? Why is this happening? And it's going to happen again because there are a lot more people out there like that guy in Highland Park, I'm afraid to say. There's a lot of reasons. And this is why anybody presenting you with a magic solution, if we wave this wand, then it all goes away, is a liar or ignorant. But I would say one thing, just culturally, and I was having this conversation yesterday with the director of a prominent nonprofit in Chicago, who's left, by the way, politically. I said, he agreed with this.
What?
Until you return man's relationship with God and man's relationship with government, until you get that back in balance, you're going to have these problems.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630. And learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So Mayor Triple Threat asked, what's going on with our society? Tell us it's going to be all right. From the Chicago Press Corps, those sorts of questions, giving her the opportunity to carry on about the problems we face, why we're seeing this unyielding violence on the streets of Chicago.
And she finally found the answer, Dan. We waited so long.
This is what she said.
Acting so brazenly, have not only no respect for themselves, but they don't have respect for an institution like the police department, who men and women every single day on every watch are literally risking life and limb for our safety. The toxicity in our public discourse is a thing that I think we should all be concerned about.
There's no question the toxicity in our political discourse. Let me give an example of some of the toxicity that she's talking about.
Please do.
And I will code what I really want to say to Donald Trump. It's two words. It begins with F and it ends with U.
Let me give you another example. I mean, the kind of toxicity she's talking about in our public discourse that is coarsening our attitudes toward one another.
Now, we know what happened with the Supreme Court yesterday. And if you read Clarence Thomas' concurrence, he said, thank you, Clarence Thomas.
Oh, you, Clarence Thomas!
You did.
Yeah.
Yes, she did.
Yeah, I think she's really hit upon something. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
And don't forget, she has the biggest schlong in Chicago, Dan.
I never forget that.
Great, let me whip this up.
Uh-huh. Yeah, actually, I've got a side hustle for her. Thank you for reminding me.
Oh, please, yes.
British producers are scouting for well-endowed fellas. Issuing a casting call for men, but obviously not limited to
yes,
because women can have penises.
It's all equity, then.
Yeah, this is for a forthcoming documentary, Too Large to Love. We like to speak to people about their positive and negative experiences of having a large penis or being with someone who has one.
Oh,
so
my,
you could hear, so this could be Lori as well as Amy.
Yeah,
they both could make a little side cash by appearing in this documentary. All right, so just a thought. Lori Lightfoot also went on to provide the solution to this coarseness that she's identified, this lack of civility in our political discourse.
What we're seeing really over the arc of these last 2 years, I get it. People are angry. They are frustrated. And they're fearful. But we can't let those things mean that we lose sight of each other's humanity. We've got to find a common sense and a purpose.
Exactly. We've got to come together and tell people that we don't like, whose decisions we disagree with, to go F themselves. That's where we get to a better place.
Yeah. And she said, you know, there's more reasons that we've had more mass shootings.
People are losing respect for the institutions of our democracy. That says to me that the people who are acting so brazenly have not only no respect for themselves, but they don't have respect for an institution.
Yeah. Well, she's certainly right about that. The same institution that she calls systemically racist, I'm talking about the Chicago police, because that was her campaign platform. And that's been her attitude as mayor. That sort of toxicity, that sort of coarseness, that sort of lack of seeing humanity in others, in the other, to borrow from the phraseology of the left. Well, that has incidents like this occurring over 4th of July weekend around Goose Island.
Chicago got a mob. He just jumped in my car.
And you
How's
to,
that summer jobs program going, by the
yeah,
way?
Yeah, summer.
That my future that she keeps telling me to log on to?
Summer of Joy is in full swing. You really have to see these videos, as I'm sure many of you saw on social media and in news reporting. I mean,
yeah, that was on Division near Halstead.
Pulls up.
He's on a bridge.
Pulls up on the bridge, and this mob charges at the cop, jumping on his hood. You know, starting to attack the vehicle, breaks his window, as you heard him say, and you see it. I mean, it's really something. I mean, it is literally something out of, like, Clockwork Orange.
They're fearing for their lives. It was an Illinois State Trooper, and then later on they sound like, back up slowly. He's like, there's more coming. There's 150 or so. They're coming at me. And they were, and it wasn't just black kids. It was white kids, Latinos, everybody. It was all these kids, and they're all holding their cell phones up. They're all, no matter what they're doing, whether they're throwing fireworks at a cop or opening the cop door and throwing a firework in, everyone's got to catch that social media moment to maybe go viral, to maybe make money, and to get their YouTube channel.
It's not limited to Chicago. It's limited to politicians with a certain mindset. So unfortunately for Philadelphia residents, they've chosen somebody similar to Mayor Triple Threat. It's just the white Irish version of him, of her, Jim Kenney.
Oh, did you hear what he said? Jim
Kenney saying what you're about to hear over the weekend. Philadelphia is also given over to the mob, given over to the thugs, thanks to politicians like Kenney and prosecutors, non-prosecution prosecutors, decarceration prosecutors like Larry Krasner, the Kim Fox of Philadelphia. They had two cops shot over the weekend in Philadelphia. And here's what the mayor said.
There's not an event or a day where I don't lay on my back at night, look at the ceiling, and wonder, worry about stuff. So everything we have in the city over the last 7 years, I worry about. I don't enjoy 4th of July. I don't enjoy the Democratic National Convention. I didn't enjoy the NFL draft. I'm waiting for something bad to happen all the time. So I'll be happy when I'm not here, when I'm not mayor, and I can enjoy some stuff.
You're looking forward to not being mayor?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm sure a lot of people are looking forward to that day, too.
Oh, my.
That's the attitude. It's all about them being put upon, the political ruling class. They're being put upon. I have concern. I have to, worry all the time. I have to anticipate bad things happening. This is so difficult for me. And, I'm looking forward
to not being mayor because I want this burden lifted from me. Yeah. He doesn't care about you guys. He cares about himself.
He's the political ruling class, always the aggrieved party. You're always disappointing politicians like Lightfoot, like Kenny, like Jelly Belly. You're such a disappointment to them. They do so much. They ask for so little. Just a constant disappointment. Don in Maryville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, morning, Dan and Amy. I think you just got that term backwards that you just said. It's not that they do so much for us and ask so little. They do so little and take so much.
Mm.
But that mayor of yours, every day I hear about her, I got to laugh. She's talking out both sides of her mouth. On one side, she talks like she has massive respect for law enforcement, and on the other side of her mouth, she's handcuffing their hands behind their back, telling them that if people run away from you, you can't chase them.
Yeah.
I mean, that city has become a real joke.
It's a hellhole.
Thanks for the call,
Don. Just like Jerry really said. And you just pray to God that your kids go wherever they get to safely. And I mean not our kids, all the children in Chicago.
Bill, Mount Greenwood.
Yeah, hi, Dan. Hi, Amy. I just want to make the point, Miss Charisma Lightfoot, she's always saying that the police have plenty of time off. They're not working 11, 12 days straight. I have a neighbor who today is starting his 30th day straight working, and I also have a family member who currently is injured on duty. She got in a bad squad car accident. but her team is currently working their 40th day straight.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear her say they have plenty of time off and look at their contract, that's just another, I mean, she can't stand the police.
Thanks for the call, Bill. Appreciate it. Frank, Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. You know, what I was most surprised about the last segment was how so many of the callers just had so much skepticism about the official government narrative of what had happened in Highland Park. And I think with politicians like Lightfoot, it's understandable why. They're just liars, essentially. On another note, I think we need to inject some humor into here.
Oh,
Pee-wee Herman, great movie. Years ago,
Pee-wee Herman's Big Adventure.
Yeah. Pee-wee Herman's Big Adventure.
Oh, sure.
Interesting movie.
Yeah,
I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Did you guys notice that J.B. Pritzker? If you go look at Francis, the main character, one of the main characters.
Yeah,
there,
yeah.
Yeah, it looks just like him.
I do see the resemblance.
Really,
Francis. And and I think we could, if we recast the movie, he could be Francis Buxton, and Lori Lightfoot could be Large Marge.
Tell him Large March sent you when he was going to the Alamo.
Reasons of her own, for reasons of her own telling. Yeah. We can have a different Large March in there.
Yeah, all right. I like some of your early casting choices. Keep working on that.
I will.
That reboot of Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Frank. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Phil, Northwest Side.
Yeah, hey, guys. You know, as far as our mayor goes, we're selling $300 million a week worth of heroin for the last 45 years. The same party that brings you that heroin is the same party that destroyed this old union, has destroyed our industry. And her right-hand girl was doing this back in high school with our friends, supplying Rogers Park and Andersonville from the west side and gangbanging. Now she's the mayor's right-hand girl. And at the same time, the shooter, this happened in front of my sister's shop in Highwood, and her fiance's going over dead bodies, helping people in the store. I think there's a second shooter, and I think this is all heavily government organized, because all these shooters seem to know each other. They have the same supplies, and you have some copycats, but they're all Antifa. They're all heavily brainwashed. They're all on head meds and weed. Not just the weed, they're always on head meds. And I know 30 years ago when they were trying to put all the kids on head meds, if you went into a drug rehab or anything else, half of those head meds have been took 30 to 60 years to pass as a legal drug in this country. It usually came from the Orient or came from Russia. And, you know, they tried putting me on it 31 years ago, and my medical doctor took me off, thank God, because I am telling you, you start having out-of-body experiences, you hear voices, all this weird stuff. It's worse than any street drugs that I was ever on as a kid. And I think to myself, these kids are so heavily medicated, and they're medicated all through grammar school with Ritalin and everything else. Then they go on to the next level,
yeah.
then they start doing street drugs at the same time. It's the perfect cocktail, plus all the communist propaganda they digest in school and on the media and everything else.
All right, thanks for the call, Phil. Again, with respect to Highland Park, We don't know. There's no indication that he was under any psychiatric care. There's no indication that he was on any psychiatric drugs, not that I've seen.
There's no indication he was part of Antifa.
Well, right. Antifa. Yeah, people trying to score political points.
Right.
There's no indication that that he had any particular political disposition. In fact, there's some indication quite the contrary. So these cases are individually specific, and while you can raise these issues, we have to stick to what we know, what we don't know in these specific instances. Mike in the Loop.
So the other day I was in the South Loop. I was talking to a couple of police officers, and they told me that day, they considered the Central Business District from 31st Street all the way up to the river. And that day, they had only 6 police officers answering 911 calls. They're supposed to have 60.
Mm-hmm.
And so they feel bad because by the time they get to the victims, the deed's been done, and they hate facing it. They feel bad about it. So when she goes on and on about the police officers and respect and all this other stuff, it's not even a tenth of the story. It's just a total joke. No wonder stuff is happening. They can't get to places fast enough. Bank robberies, whatever, right?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mike.
Sometimes people wait 3 to 4 hours. I heard over the weekend 51% of 911 calls went unanswered.
Well, we've talked about that last week, and we talked about it again yesterday with Ted Dabrowski. This is WirePoint's study, and this is so important. In 2021, out of 750-some thousand odd 911 calls, 405,000, there was no police available. These were priority one and priority two calls. Priority one is serious bodily injury or threat of. Priority two is police officer can make a difference in whatever the public disorder is. And he went through, he broke some down for us. We're talking about stabbings, like in the tens of thousands.
Carjackings, yeah.
And so, right, so that is just a massive, massive fail. And this is what does it send in terms of signals to those who are interested in preying on others? One, police aren't going to show up, probably. Two, if they do, I get to, and I, even if I get caught, which, you know, you're talking about the chances continuing to go down as we're talking about this, chances unlikely that police will show up in so many instances. And then if they do, unlikely that I'll get caught. And if I get caught, then I get to deal with Kim Fox and be turned out more than likely. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're just waving a red cape in front of predators, basically. That's how this political ruling class in Chicago and Cook County operates.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Ali Mayorkas was on Face the Nation on Sunday, and that's always entertaining when he is, particularly with the performatively earnest Margaret Brennan, who's, you know, if she looks serious enough that we're supposed to take her that seriously. It's really laughable. And so is this interview she did. One of the questions she asked was, after they got done providing the damage control on what's happening on the border, sort of infomercial style, the only thing that was missing was that one of those crazy Ron Popeil sweaters on Margaret Brennan. Yeah. She did ask about Supreme Court justices. You know, there was this assassination plot against Brett Kavanaugh, and nobody seems particularly concerned about inside the Beltway.
Not at all.
So what about that, particularly with, churches and crisis pregnancy centers being vandalized and firebombed, and pro-abort organizations saying, you know, well, suggesting rage against pro-lifers, pro-life organizations, pro-life politicians, the
certain
majority
Catholic
on
churches.
The Supreme Court.
Yeah.
So what's Mayorkas doing over there at Department of Homeland Security?
Twiddling his thumbs? What's he doing?
Reversing and overturning Roe versus Wade has really heightened the threat environment, and we have deployed resources to ensure the safety and security of the Supreme Court and the justices.
Oh, that's good enough for me.
All right, wrap it up. Take it home.
That was good enough for Margaret Brennan and good enough for me. It's actually not good enough for me. I'd like to know more for more discussion on the topic. We're pleased to be joined by Kevin Brock, former assistant director of Intel for the FBI, former principal deputy director for the National Counterterrorism Center. Kevin, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, Dan, Amy, my pleasure.
Don't worry about the justices. We got this, says Mayorkas. So we have resources and we've deployed them. Never much in the way of specifics and sort of some additional color on how seriously you're taking this within, you know, your governmental responsibilities. What's your sense of the seriousness with which Mayorkas and law enforcement are taking, you know, like assassination plots against the sitting Supreme Court justice?
Yeah, so serious that the governors of Maryland, Virginia, have been petitioned by the U.S. Marshals to provide resources to help protect the justices who live in those states. you know, they're having to go hat in hand to try to, because the federal government apparently, according to the marshals, is not being responsive enough or supportive enough to their duties and their responsibilities to protect these justices. And you know, the disgusting demonstrations that are taking place in these family neighborhoods and presenting very real threats. And to your point, we've already got an interdicted assassination attempt on the books. This is real. This threat environment has been as crackling as I can remember in a long time, with indicators, strong indicators, that violence is at hand against, you know, the pro-life pregnancy clinics and pro-life leaders themselves, conservatives who hold pro-life positions, the rhetoric coming from certain politicians that are, you know, the left always likes to talk about dog whistles. These are more than dog whistles that they're issuing, and with a tacit rhetorical wink and a nod to people who want to demonstrate, and with an understanding that it might turn violent.
Well, it's strange because they're putting out, you know, the Supreme Court justices' home addresses and the addresses of where their kids go to school, Amy Coney Barrett in particular, and yet they're not even kicked off social media for doing that.
Exactly. Where the double standard is glaring. Let's face it, the upset with the decision on the left is obviously tangible, and the rhetoric that's used by the threat actors that abortion is not safe, neither are you, is very real. These are groups that will coalesce to perform violence or to conduct violence, firebombing clinics, defacing and desecrating churches and that type of thing. This sets up nicely for the FBI to investigate. The FBI has done this for years. They know how to look into these types of groups and basically dismantle them. The question is, will they? I have high hopes that they will. There are early indicators that they're paying attention. But it's we have learned over the last few years that there's a perception in this country that when it comes to justice and law enforcement, that sometimes it's meted out differently depending on what political view you hold.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd say so. And Merrick Garland and Christopher Wray aren't helping much as they are still seemingly more concerned about somebody saying a crossword to the superintendent of the Loudoun County schools than they are people firebombing churches and crisis pregnancy centers. And so you can understand the skepticism.
You can understand it. It's funny you should bring that up, because that superintendent still holds his job amazingly. Mm-hmm. After last year tolerating the transfer of a quote-unquote transgender student to from one high school where he raped a female student to another where he did the same. Mm-hmm. in a girl's restroom. So, you know, it only enforces Americans, the confusion of regular Americans. I mean, what's going on here? Why does it seem to be so uneven? The Justice Department has laws on the books. This has been well documented. I know you guys have been discussing it as well. That mandates that Supreme Court justice should be afforded adequate protection and outlaws the types of demonstrations that we're seeing in front of their homes. Why isn't action being taken? Well, because the DOJ is highly political right now.
Mm. Wanted to get to your professional perspective on these mass shooting incidents, of course, because of what happened on July 4th in Highland Park. Mm-hmm. At the 4th of July parade there. And, trying to make sense of it, trying to look for motives. Oftentimes they're not forthcoming just because it's not so easy to explain. There was no political or religious motivation or anger at a particular individual or group.
Right.
And that seems to be the case from what we know to this point. But one thing that's interesting about this case and is often a part of the discussion is this judgment call, is our judgment calls by government as well as by family. And here we have a situation where the alleged shooter threatened to kill family members. They took it seriously enough to call police back in September of 2019. And then 3 months later, his dad sponsors him, because he's only 19 years old at the time, for a FOID card so that he can purchase weapons. And so on the one hand, you know, you want to be careful about Monday morning quarterbacking parents based on interpreting art or something that was said, or being morose and detached. On the other hand, something like that, it seems to me, it demands a family explanation, or demands that law enforcement extract an explanation so that people can understand what happened. And also, part of the discussion then is policy related in terms of why state police chose to process that FOID application, even with the sponsorship, despite, as we understand, knowing about this incident where police were called to the home.
Right. So what I'm about to say is with my tongue planted firmly in my cheek, but there is a little bit of an element of truth behind it. And that is, instead of focusing on gun control, maybe we should focus on parental control and focus on who is qualified to be a parent. Again, tongue in cheek, but the point being that every time we unravel one of these situations afterwards, we see high dysfunction in the family. We see high dysfunction among the parents. If there's a father present, oftentimes there isn't. And that is, and you ask my professional opinion, that is the one factor behind most violent crime in this country. You're talking about disturbed individuals that come from very troubled backgrounds. This doesn't happen with normal people raised in a two-parent, nuclear family that's functioning fairly well. All families have their issues, but the point being that there is an identifiable factor that nobody really wants to talk about, nobody really wants to address, because it addresses things like missing fathers and people who are dependent on the system for support and that type of thing. So nobody wants to address those types of things, but it is a clear and consistent thread through all of this. It leads to the kind of mental illness in children that we're seeing spike all over the country. So as children are born out of wedlock in the United States, it's 40% now, up to 70% in the minority communities. This is a future indicator of violent criminal behavior. Not everybody who's raised in those families obviously is going to turn to violence, but everybody who does turn to violence seems to be raised in those types of families. So the rise in mental illness, we see increased suicide rates among our young in the last 20 years. We have put into the hands of these disturbed young kids virtual shooting training with these very highly effective games. You look at this guy that did the shooting in Highland Park, and I don't use his name on purpose. How does one at that age gain the skill to get on take a high ground and be that accurate and kill seven people? Others have pointed towards an increase in impact of, or increase in the dangerousness of drugs like marijuana. And then one other factor, and I'll stop here. And that is, we have, and you're in this business, and I would love your input on it as well. We have to get to a point where we realize that the resultant fame for the shooter, because of widespread publicity of who the shooter is, their background, their name, the notoriety, it doesn't matter if it's negative fame, it is fame, and it is highly attractive to these disturbed individuals.
Yeah. Well, we're learning this morning that the dad is already lawyered up, but could he face charges or just, civil suits?
We've seen charges before where they can, but it looks like in this instance, the kid obtained guns through the process that's in place.
Yeah.
And in a state where you guys have some of the strictest controls. So.
Yeah, and on the fame thing too, John Lott, we were talking to John Lott yesterday too, and he said, you know, in many of these cases, you just look at them, if you sort of aggregate them and go through the case studies, you have somebody that's essentially trying to commit suicide. And so they...
He did have a suicide attempt in April of 2019.
And so they want to go out in a blaze of glory in their own deluded minds, and the media facilitates this. And we mention this all the time because we don't mention the shooters' names in these situations either, for exactly the reason you're saying. And I note that the Tribune, for example, among other papers, I don't know if their policy is still the same, but when I was growing up, they did not publish the names of suicide victims because they understood, we understood, that there's the tendency for copycatting for people that are not in a stable mental state. And so it's the same thing here. So I'm in complete agreement with that. And I understand people want the details, and you're necessarily the name's going to be part of that, and family members will speak out and this and that, but in terms of at least attempting to minimize that as much as possible so as to discourage this as a path to some sort of, eternal infamy, which seems to be what some of these deluded people want, at least in part. So that's where I come down.
Yeah, it is one factor that I think we should be looking at. These are hard questions. You start out by saying, how do we make sense of it? We can't.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of factors that impact why somebody picks up a gun as a young person and start killing people. But we've got to be honest and start confronting these things. And that's more than just a discussion about gun control. The politicians in this on these mass shootings are worthless. They're absolutely add nothing.
Yeah,
to the discussion.
No, we are very familiar with that here.
And now all the sports teams are responding.
We've got all sorts of politicians or wannabe politicians who are adding nothing in real time. So, yeah, we're experiencing that as we have as a nation many, many times. Kevin Brock, former assistant director of Intel for the FBI, former principal deputy director of the National Counterterrorism Center. Kevin, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
It was great. Thank you.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Did you know Celine Dion? You know, Her Heart Will Go On. That's Celine Dion.
Yeah, I know her.
Do you know that she came out 4 years ago with a gender-neutral line of clothing for kids?
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's true.
I know she ended her show in Vegas and she had some health issues, but I did not know.
Here's a commercial for Celine Dion's gender-neutral line of clothing for kids.
It's okay, it's okay. I'm Celine Dion.
Our children, they are not really our children, as we are all just links in a never-ending chain that is life. For us, they are everything. But in reality, we are only a fraction of their universe. We miss the past. They dream of tomorrow. We may thrust them forward into the future, but the course will always be theirs to choose. I can't believe they called security. I mean, oh, come on, I'm Celine Dion. I'm not spending the night in jail. Holy shit. Guys, relax, easy. I'm Celine Dion.
Yeah, girl, and I'm Beyonce.
I'm calling my agent.
What is going on?
It is this bizarre dystopian. She's fleeing from police. Then she's in a neonatal unit walking around blowing dust over babies while she says, and her line is called like Celine Nunu or something. Well, you heard her. Your children are not your children. They're everything to you, but you're only a small fraction of their lives. As Rod Dreher wrote at American Conservative, Himmler's Kidwear by Celine Dion. Oh. It's just about right. Holy cow. Wow. I mean, it is like
I'm watching it right now. Yeah,
way
it is.
Creepy. Which is a great intro, I think, to our next guest and his book. He is Eddie Scarry. He's D.C. columnist at The Federalist. His new book, Liberal Misery, How the Hateful Left Sucks Joy Out of Everything and Everyone, including your kids, to the extent they're really your kids, I would add. Eddie, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hello. Happy to be here.
So what about that? I mean, the part of the left is this sort of, as I said, creepy platonic disposition they have that we heard it from Terry McAuliffe. We heard it from the Secretary of the Department of Education that, you know, you're a stakeholder in your kids' lives, but you're not so important that you get to have input on curriculum in schools, or so important that you can't have government come over the top and instruct you on how to make decisions about their health during a pandemic. And all sorts of other things, including apparently their clothing per Celine Dion.
Oh, sure. And also teach them something that's not even, it's not fun. It's there's no joy to it. I mean, we're talking about kids as young as kindergarten through third grade, teaching them about gender. That is what the joyless, hateful left is hung up on these days. Is talking about something that one is fairly useless in general, but particularly when it comes to children, teaching them about sex and, you know, the idea of being a child is nothing if not innocence and joy. But no, we need to make them learn about sex immediately. Once they come out of the room, we need to teach them about transgender ideology. That is just a symptom of what I write in my book, Liberal Misery. Just how angry, vindictive, joyless, spiteful that liberals have become.
But wait a second. When I see the kids at your local trans strip show for the holidays, you know, like everybody's smiling and happy and showing their wares. I mean, what could be more self-affirming than that?
I would assume you're being facetious.
Yes, you were. Yes.
Congrats.
But yes, I think that's a cover for what's actually going on, which is indoctrination. And that is again another point in my book: the idea that you have to indoctrinate everyone, including children, in their weird ideology on the left, because politics has become all-consuming of the left on a personal level. This is what. Take any given liberal. Of course, it's not all of them. Not all liberals are miserable people. But if you're a miserable person, the odds are that you are a liberal.
Not all dogs are poodles, but all poodles are dogs, right? Yeah,
exactly. Like, yes, yeah. Another way of putting it. But yes, I would say that this is something that's actually there's a study in my book about just how much liberals this politics has just become all consuming in their lives. And the way that's kind of demonstrated in my book is a study where I look at where it was, regardless of income level, you can be a janitor or you can be a CEO. If you are on the left, you are more likely to give money to one of your causes. On the left, it's, you know, in environmentalism or the transgender stuff, anything. You are more likely to give money to that cause just because it is so important to you. Whereas on the right, you Republicans and conservatives, even independents, you ask them, what is it you care about? What's the one thing you care about? Let's say it's even abortion or you know, pro-life causes. If you are a Republican or independent, you are less likely to give money to that cause because this is not something that weighs on your mind day in and day out. like it does the left.
So what are they going to do next? What are they going to destroy next? What do you think their game plan is?
Well, right now, I think the most important thing is our children. That's what we're seeing with the schools. And they started, I would say they were going after, they've done it already with the college campuses. Those are completely run by the left now, angry, vindictive, petty places. And you can see it with the campus protests. They've turned these children into little monsters, little social justice monsters. And then now they're going as young as the public schools. And that's why you see the backlash that you're seeing. The idea that parents are showing up and running for, I think it was the New York Times or the Washington Post, one of which was so funny. The headline was something like, the next place that the MAGA people are politicizing, school board election, which is like, heaven forbid that people want something to do with their children. Heaven forbid they actually take control of their own children's lives and their own children's agents, destinies. The idea that it's politicized simply because there's a difference of opinion now, and people are saying, no, we're not doing this trans stuff. You're not going to teach my kindergarten students sex, sex before they even know what that anything like that. But yes, that's the biggest battle right now, and it's nice to actually see parents getting so involved.
I like the story in your book about what happened when you're at a bar discussing the Rittenhouse verdict with a friend of yours who disagreed with you about the verdict. But tell us that story as sort of illustrative of the leftist busybody.
Yeah, so this was one of those. I was already well into writing my book, Liberal Misery, but this was one of those occasions where it's a small social interaction, just something in your everyday life that I think so many of your listeners have run into, and why I wanted to write this book, because I had so many interactions like this. In this particular case, this happened only about three or four months ago, where I was sitting at the bar in a restaurant with my friend. She's a liberal, but she's one of the good ones. We were talking about the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict that has just happened. So many people had not realized that because they weren't paying as much attention as people like us, but hadn't realized that nobody involved in that case was black. Every single person, Kyle Rittenhouse, the people he shot, the people who died, everyone was white. But there was this media narrative and the national media narrative that there was something racist about this it was anti-Black Lives Matter. Everybody was white, and I said, "Oh, it's weird that that so many people say this is racist." And she said, "Well, I think it was a little bit racist," is my friend saying this. And I said, "What was racist about the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict?" And this bartender, who was a perfectly fine person right up until this moment, who was preparing a drink or something, looks up from what she's doing, completely uninvited to this conversation, looks up and says, "It was racist because," and I had to put my hand up and I said, "We were just talking amongst ourselves." I had to shut that down so fast, and I could tell she was so taken aback that anyone would interrupt her, because what she had to say must be so important. And not only that, if you disagree with her, you are a bad person. That was what I saw coming. And again, this is why I wrote this book, because I ran into so many situations like that. But I will say, the point of making sense, putting an emphasis on the fact that I had to put my hand up and tell her to buzz off and do her job, not butt into strangers' conversation, is because that's what has come to. You have to start telling these people, or you have to basically stop feeding the animals.
Oh, I would love to know why she thought the Kyle Rittenhouse was racist.
Oh, I have no idea. I shut it down. I don't think it's her business to walk into some stranger's conversation, let alone her customers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that is the sort of entitlement that is afoot in the culture. There's no question about it. Yeah, that is a pretty good illustration of the attitude and the need to draw lines and the need to stand up for yourself, which not enough conservatives do, beyond perhaps at the ballot box. Eddie Scari, D.C. columnist at The Federalist, Federalist.com. His new book, Liberal Misery, How the Hateful Left Sucks Joy Out of Everything and Everyone. Eddie, thanks for joining us. Good luck with the book.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560.
The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and this is a curious move by the big guy. I know he's singularly focused on reducing the price at the pump and taming inflation, but this story from Reuters, of all places, more than 5 million barrels of oil that were part of a historic U.S. emergency reserves release to lower domestic fuel prices were exported to Europe and Asia last month. Why are we exporting oil when we have to export the big guy to go to places like Saudi Arabia and Venezuela to try and get more energy supply for domestic use, one wonders. To help us with that wondering, we're pleased to be joined by Steve Moore, economist, author of Trumponomics, and more recently, GovZilla. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Well, good morning, guys. By the way, I cannot answer that question that you just asked.
You have to.
It is unanswerable.
You have to answer
You have
it.
To, or we're going to hang up. Relationship yeah. over.
Why are we exporting our emergency fuel supply to Europe? It makes no sense. It makes people angry. It's raising the price of gas at the pump here, and it's inexplicable. And by the way, at the same time, guys, you may have read in the Wall Street Journal, I think it was a Thursday or Friday of last week, that the Joe Biden, who's doing everything he can to reduce gas prices, has put extreme limits on offshore drilling in the United States
yes.
and in the Gulf of Mexico and other areas. So, gee, that doesn't sound to me like he's doing everything he can to reduce gas prices.
Well, is there a chance that, you know, we're going to drain the SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve?
I'll look at you with the acronyms.
Good question.
Well, yeah, just in case he wasn't yeah. sure.
No,
former oil and gas exec, Amy Jacobson.
Yeah, I don't know how much we've. I think I don't know how much is in there. I'm going to check that while we're. I'm going to Google that right now. But we are draining it. I don't think we're going to get to zero. But
no, it's at, but it's
well, it's fell to the lowest since 1986.
Yeah, right. It's at about a 40-year low. Yeah.
So why are we giving?
And the other thing is, I want people to understand why we have a Strategic Petroleum Reserve, and that is because you know of a natural disaster like a hurricane or something like that would disrupt our normal supply of oil. This isn't a natural event. It's basically because of politics that we have to. I mean, we have plenty of oil in this country, folks. If we had a drill policy, we wouldn't need to be draining our strategic reserve. So it makes no sense. And meanwhile, Germany is moving towards coal. Did you see that? They're going to reduce global warming by shifting to coal because their green energy strategy didn't work. And now we are to the left. We are officially to the left, guys, of Europe on green energy environmentalism.
Well, right. I mean, you had Macron lean over to the big guy just the other week and say, hey, you know, the Saudis aren't going to be able to provide everything you need. I don't know. I hate to be the one to break this to you.
Yeah, I'm not so sure Joe Biden heard that because right now he's over in Saudi Arabia on his hands and knees begging the Saudis to increase their oil supply. That, by the way, that's never in 40 years. That's never worked. The Saudis, you know, basically do one thing. They're profit maximizers. They're going to do whatever whatever they're going to produce as much oil as maximizes their profits. Period. Yeah. They're not going to listen to Joe Biden.
No,
I mean, it's silly. It's humiliating, actually.
They're going to produce as much as they need to fund the Live Tour. I mean, they got to pay all those six salaries
exactly.
they made to Bryson DeChambeau and Dustin Johnson. So if things improve in terms of the political balance of power in D.C. come November, is there anything a majority in the House and Senate can do to end run the big guy when it comes to energy policy?
Well, I'm going to answer that in a broader fashion. You know, the big question is, will the Republicans stop this stampede of government spending and debt? You know, that's the most important thing right now is, you know, we're bankrupting our country. I think everybody listening to the show knows that what's going on in Washington with the trillions and trillions. By the way, as we speak, Dan and Amy, there are negotiations between Chuck Schumer and other leading Democrats to see if they can get some form of a Build Back Better bill so they can spend another $1 trillion.
Oh,
so
they
the
never stop.
Is whether the Republicans, when they take over, because they are going to absolutely win the House, and I think they've got a really strong chance of winning the Senate as well. The real question is whether the Republicans will stop the spending. And I can't say yes. I mean, right now there is a bill before Congress. I think we talked about this a few weeks ago on your show. They call it the China bill. And what it really is we're giving $50 billion to the chip maker, you know, the microchip companies like Intel. Intel is going to get tens of billions of dollars of your and my money. And somehow this is going to increase American competitiveness to drive up our debt and give handouts to companies is somehow going to make America richer. I mean, so I don't know. I can't guarantee you guys that Republicans are going to be much better on the spending because they're politicians. They love to play Santa Claus. I don't care if they have an R or a D next to their name.
Well, especially when you have Republicans like Mitt Romney, who writes about America's denials in The Atlantic over the weekend. Among other things, he writes, as the ice caps melt and record temperatures make the evening news, we figure that buying a Prius and recycling the boxes from our daily Amazon deliveries will suffice. I don't know what that's supposed to. I don't know what that's supposed to mean, or in terms of how it translates into a policy that Mitt Romney is advocating. But it doesn't sound good to me.
Well, he's trying to shame us, you know, and, yes. And he should be ashamed of losing the election in 2012 election. But you know, look, I mean, does Mitt Romney have any kind of constituency anymore?
No,
he's not even popular in his home state of Utah. So, but I hate this, you know, moral shaming us. We need to be getting this economy moving again. And, you know, our Laffer and I had a piece in the Wall Street Journal on Friday. Thank you so much for mentioning it.
Yeah, I did. We did mention it. I talked about it. I talked about it with John.
I talked about it with
John Tamney from RealClearMarkets.com. I talked about it with him. So now I'm talking about it again.
Well, good, because you need growth. We need to have lower taxes. We need to drill. I never actually answered your question. Will Republicans get, you know, drilling again? Going, I hope so. But you know, the Biden administration is putting all sorts of regulatory. You know, even the Securities and Exchange Commission is now the Securities Environment Commission.
What?
I mean, they're more
when did that happen
in climate change than they are the safety of your investment.
Well, okay, but so let's say there. I mean, so let's just develop this a little bit more to give people some optimism and maybe some motivation to go to the polls on November 8th. So let's say that it happens and you have leadership in both the House and Senate Republican caucuses that is inclined to do whatever is within their power to do to address energy costs. What is that they can do working around the big guy who's, you know, ideologically committed to windmills?
So that's a great question. And since you guys and I talked last, we had the West Virginia Supreme Court decision, which basically really reins in the regulatory power of federal agencies. It's about time, right? This should have happened 50 years ago. These regulatory agencies were not elected. These people were not elected. The legislative branch makes the law, as I read the Constitution, not some unelected political appointee of Biden administration. And so what I want the Republicans to do is say, look, you're not passing any regulations, none of them. Until we get congressional approval, no regulations will be passed. How about that, Dan? Why doesn't the Congress do its responsibility? They're the ones who make the laws.
Yeah, I do like that. Yeah, hold them up. Right. I mean, yeah. play the sort of hardball that the left is always want to play. On their policy agenda, that would be something novel to see from the Republicans in the House and the Senate, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, and they have the constitutional power to do it. The Supreme Court has just ruled, and we should be producing all of our energy right now. And the war on energy should come to an end, and the Republicans will have a chance to do it. Now, whether they have the backbone to do it or not. Now, I lived through the Newt Gingrich era when Republicans took over Congress for the first time in, 50 years? And they did make some real changes. And I have to give them credit. You know, Dick Armey and Newt Gingrich and that crowd did amazing things. And we turned around the economy, did welfare reform. We did the capital gains cut. We balanced the budget. People forget the last time we had a balanced budget was when Bill Clinton was in office because he had a Republican Congress and a pretty fiscally conservative president. The problem is, Dan and Amy, I don't see any chance of Joe Biden pivoting to the middle the way that Clinton did. Do you?
No,
not at all. Do you even think that he's going to run in 2024? No, that's a serious question. Because 70% of Democrats don't even want him to run for re-election.
I don't think, you know, the big hot news right now is Sheryl Sandberg.
Yeah.
Sheryl Sandberg
for what? President?
For the Democratic nomination.
Really?
What happened to Pete Buttigieg?
What
happened to our intern at Channel 5?
I think they figured, that's not going to work. But take this seriously.
The former Facebook COO is going to be the nominee for president. That's what they're angling.
Less likely than Donald Trump being the Republican nominee.
I heard he's going to announce.
I think it is less likely than Trump being the nominee if he runs. But I mean, that's interesting.
Think about this. Okay, I'm going to make the case for him. By the way, I never met her. I don't know that much about her. She's got one of the best-selling books in America. She is a successful CEO. She's loved by the kind of feminists and, you know, the women.
Right. Don't Say Bossy campaign. She had that. That was really important. So don't call women bossy. What about our very own governor here, J.B. Pritzker? He's got a lot of money. If he would win re-election in November, then he could do for the country what he's done for Illinois.
Shame on you. Shame on you, Dan. He is not going to win re-election. He's going to go down in defeat. Bailey's going to beat him. No, I actually think Bailey's going to win that race. I think we're going to win some big, big governor's races. But I think that the other funny one is, you know who else wants to run for president?
Who?
Gavin Newsom of California.
Oh, yeah.
he came out with California.
Sure.
He's got an ad running in Florida.
I know, in Florida.
Did you see that? Come on over. If you don't like Florida, we come and be free in California.
Be free.
Be free.
You know what's really funny about that ad? What's funny about Freedom the ad is that the line in the ad is, come to California. Yeah. We're in the daylight. You're in the dark. And it's like, no, wait a minute.
Californians fled California because of its draconian lockdown.
Well, first of all,
California stinks.
California's energy policy is going to literally leave them in the dark.
I mean, exactly.
And you can't water your lawn more than once a week. I mean, you can't. There's a lot of restrictions. Yeah. There's little freedom in California.
That's going to be a fun. That's
going to be the first on the Dan and Amy show.
So Gavin Newsom.
The Democratic ticket for 2024 will be Newsom Pritzker.
That'd be great. Newsom Pritzker.
Governors in America.
Shaking the fat guy.
Newsom Pritzker. Sandberg. That's sort of an interesting one. That primary could be fun. I can hardly wait. Steve Moore, economist, author of Trumponomics, and more recently, Govzilla. Steve, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys, have a great week. Take care.
Thanks for the scoop. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Dan and Amy, hey, what's up with Ben Bradley? WGN news reporter Ben Bradley, Mr. COVID.
Attacking, I love Ben Bradley.
Attacking Emma Woodhouse online and trying to shame anybody who wasn't a total COVIDian. Going after me on things he knows nothing about.
What did he do? WGN
investigative reporter Ben Bradley selling his house in Hinsdale for $1.9 million. Property tax bill unusually low, $5,000.
What? Wait. No, that's fraudulent.
The Hinsdale property is owned by a land trust. In 2010, records show the land trust bought the three-story house from a builder for $1.4 million. The Cook County assessor values the property at $231,000.
What?
Yeah.
The land's even for $231,000?
The builder tore down the old one-story house on the property and built in 1915, and Ben built his own little compound. When questions were raised, we immediately reached out to the assessor's office and heard nothing back. If and when they get back to me, I will, of course, pay the amount due, as I've always done in the past. Oh, sure. Nothing curious about that. His neighbors on either side of the property?
I bet they pay $24,000.
One house is worth $950,000. He's selling for $1.9 million. Their property tax bill is four times his and $19,000. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Half the value.
And quadruple the...
Right.
Property tax.
The other value.
Oh, boy. What?
The other house is valued at $396,000. So it must be one of these old houses that's a teardown, too.
Right.
They have a tax bill of $8,200. Still 60% higher than Ben's $396,000. He's selling his home for $1.9 million. Are you related to Luis Gutierrez, Ben Bradley? Remember when Luis Gutierrez's house mysteriously wasn't on the Cook County property tax rolls, thanks to John Cass's many columns on the topic? That was wonderful.
And now he's living in Puerto Rico.
Uh-huh.
Do you have a picture of the house?
The assessor indicates the house has one bathroom. The ad
for the sale of the house is what? Let me guess. Five bed, three bath.
Five and a half. The assessor has it, is it one bathroom. The sale, you know, the post to right. sell it, five and a half bathrooms. The old house has no fireplaces, according to the assessor. The house has no fireplaces, except the house has two fireplaces, according to the ad.
Oh, this is bad. He should lawyer up. That's not good.
Hey, Ben, you better rip the toilets out like your buddy Pritzker. Oh, boy. Oh, boy, isn't this fun. Ben Bradley's special deal, Ben Bradley tax cheat, your anchor on the WGN News. Oh, I didn't know. I just pay what they send, really. $5,000. You're a sophisticated guy. You're a newsman. You know what's going on with property taxes in the region. You know what home prices and property tax are in Hinsdale. Come on, let me cross-examine you, Ben. So tell me again how you thought, oh, $5,000, that's just what we owe. Because, hey, you know, who would ever question the assessor, particularly when you know you're paying about 1/7 of what you should be paying based on a accurate assessment of the new home you built. And it's, oh, isn't that interesting? Our media friends, our watchdogs, holding the politicians to account. Ben Bradley. Ouch. Ooh, that's a tough one.
Getting uncomfortable around here. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Because I used to own a home in Chicago.
$5,000 for a $2 million house. And it's a, yeah! Nice job, Ben. Hey, good luck with the sale.
Anybody would jump on that if that tax tax bill stayed the same.
$1.9 in cash, right, if you could have the assessor commit to a $5,000. I'll take it right now. How about that? When's the open house? Maybe we could go as a team. Chicago's Morning Answer shows up to Ben Bradley's open house. Kick the tires over there. We can make it an income property, you and me, Amy.
Okay. Airbnb.
Congratulations, Ben Bradley.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, the one of the attorneys retained by the family of the Highland Park July 4th parade shooter has spoken with the press, spoke with News Nation. Steve Greenberg said, I don't think anyone's ever aware of any red flags that make them think their son is going to go out in their own community and start shooting people. Had they seen any signs of it, I think they would have acted. They're responsible parents.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Which is consistent with Uncle Paul, the suspected shooter's uncle, what he had to say.
I just want to say I'm deeply, deeply sorry for everyone that lost their lives and got injured. From the bottom of my heart, I'm heartbroken, and my heart is shattered to hear this, and I can't even believe it, and I just want to express my deeply sorry and my condolences to everybody. Me and my brother were very well known in Ravinia, Highland Park, and we have a good character. Everybody loves us, and this is just, it breaks my heart to even hear about all this. There's been no warning signs as I saw. I saw him yesterday evening, and when I went home, I said hi to him. And then when I came back downstairs, I said bye. He said bye. And that was it.
Uncle Paul also said on News Nation, in the last 2 years, I saw no signs of trouble. He showed no aggressions toward me and no violent outbreak.
But yet that is not what the Highland Park Police and the Lake County Major Crimes Task Force is saying.
Well, note, in the last 2 years, that's very specific. Because
what about the last 3 years?
Correct. Because in the last 3 years, we have a different story.
Yeah, April 2019, a family member called Highland Park Police. There is a 911 call saying that he tried to kill himself. So the police responded. No charges were filed. Then a few months later, September 2019, the Highland Park Police were called again by a family member because they claim, quote, Bobby is threatening to kill everyone in this family. And when police arrived, they confiscated those 16 knives, a sword, and a dagger. But no charges were filed because no one in the family would file the complaint. So then a few months later, in December, he wants a FOID card, but he's 19 years old. So his dad sponsors him for his FOID card. So there is no, so Illinois State Police, there's no information about past behavior because it's clean because nobody ever filed a complaint against him.
So, right. So then you go back to Uncle Paul and to the family attorney and say, what about that?
Who's lying?
Times of Israel reporting following the shooting. A local Chabad emissary said he had witnessed the suspected shooter entering a synagogue during the Jewish festival of Passover in April. Rabbi Yosef Shanowitz recognized the photo of the suspected shooter that was released by police following the shooting. He realized he had encountered the suspect a few months earlier, quoting Rabbi Shanowitz, during the Passover holiday, that person entered the Chabad house. We have an armed security guard sitting in front. I approached him and certainly asked him to leave as I noticed he was not a member of our community.
Ooh.
He said he was in touch with the families of the victims, the rabbi, and was trying to be as helpful as we can at this difficult time, talking about the victims, obviously, of the shooting. His synagogue is two blocks away from the site of the shooting. He helped shelter four teenage boys who were preparing a Chabad booth for the parade after the first shots were heard. And after taking them in and making sure they called their parents, he went over to the Highland Park Hospital to visit more than 30 people that were injured in the shooting. And he just talked about that, just, you know, talking about it. I thought it would be helpful, even if they were not people of Jewish faith, some weren't, that a member of the clergy was there. So
but why did he go there?
A nice gesture.
April?
Well, right. I mean, this is scary. So I mean, he's wandering around. He's going to a place that he's, you know, not been invited to. They doesn't seem to have an explanation, at least that the rabbi relayed in terms of why he was there. And that this combined with some of his online videos as this aspiring rapper, combined with some of his planning that we know was being done for the shooting that took place that he committed. And none of this adds up to anything, particularly the incident. And again, what you recounted is from a police report. So this idea, the parents that was circulating, the parents are like denying the police were involved or denying.
They came to the house and confiscated weapons.
Right. I mean, this is a police report. That's evidence.
We text attorney Steve Greenberg. We just, you know, because we're trying to get him on the show, but he texted back and he said he can't. Sorry. So I just believe he doesn't want to. Exactly. Or it wouldn't be prudent at this time. But so the parents have lawyered up, and I'm sure if they're not charged, there's going to be civil litigation against them.
I don't see anything that we know that so far that would implicate them in this. So that it's not about holding them criminally liable based on what we know now, but it's about saying, well,
he tried to kill you all, and then 3 months later, you think it's a good idea as a parent to give this 19-year-old who doesn't have a job, who's been described as a loner, pot smoker, you know, secluded in his apartment, you're going to give him weapons?
Well, so some sort of explanation of that turnaround, I think, is in order. Ugh. And, you know, really what they saw and didn't see. The uncle saying, I didn't see any, there was no aggressiveness, there was no violence toward me in the last 2 years. As I said, that's very specific. In addition to the drug use, the isolation, this is what his alleged former friends in the music industry were saying online. So it leaves you wanting more answers, and the father, the uncle, seem to be in the best position to provide whatever answers are available to be provided. And so you can understand why people are raising these questions. I think it's fair.
I mean, it makes me so sick.
Tony, Southside, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Dan, good morning. Amy, my lammy lamb.
Hello.
So, you know, you just said, we'll leave us wanting answers. I just want to go back to 1979. Brenda Ann Spencer killed two people outside of an elementary school in San Diego, right? And that, of course, created a song by Bob Geldof and Boomtown Rats, I Don't Like Mondays. At the end of the song, he says, we can see no reasons because there are no reasons. They looked at this girl. She didn't have drug abuse. They thought they did, but they found no evidence of that at the time. They also found that she might have hit her head when she was a kid on a bike and did something low, but there's sometimes these things can't be answered. It is what it is.
Well,
they can be prevented. I mean, parents.
Thanks for the
parents,
call,
it's really simple. And I know he's 22, and we were arguing about this yesterday. Like, well, he's 22 now. He's an adult. But you know he still suffers from mental illness.
Well,
he needed to get a job. He wasn't a functioning member of society. Well, I guess he was an online rapper.
He's still in your home.
You know what? Bingo. And that Uncle Paul went on during that interview, but I never really talked to him. Well, if people are living with you, you might want to check in on them.
Well, that requires more follow-up, too. But, I mean, I don't care if you're 22 or 42. If you're still living in the home, people that are in the home with you are seeing something.
So they lived a separate, according to Greenberg, their attorney, they lived in separate apartments in a duplex with his father and his uncle.
But you're still around. Yeah. You're still around, and you still have the 2019 incident in your memory bank as you're watching whatever he is doing in real time or not doing. You know he's struggling to get a job and hold a job. Maybe you think, oh, he's just trying to focus on his music career. Well, okay, well, are you taking, do you have any indication of what the status is with his music career, what kind of things he's getting into or interested in?
I mean, his YouTube postings were disgusting. The last one was a beheading.
But, right, I mean, so, you know, you start to sort of pull all of these pieces together and you say, do we have some sort of issue with our son here or our nephew here? That seems to be a reasonable question to ask. And I don't think you've gotten a reasonable answer from the family or the attorney to
and
this point.
And what in God's name was he doing at that synagogue in April? That scares me.
Well, you know, I don't know. Larry and Carol Stream.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Uncle Paul's story seems to have changed a little bit. The reason I say that, I was watching the network Fox News all day Sunday, and their reporter had him on. And during the discussion, the reporter, you know, do you know the kid? He said, well, I almost never see him because I live on the second floor of the house. He lived first floor of the house with the reporter said at all. And he said, yeah, the brother's father had died some recent years ago. So it was just the father, the kid, and then Uncle Paul on the second floor. And he said they very seldom saw each other. Then the reporter asked him what about his mother. And he doesn't live here. So worry.
Yeah.
No, you're breaking up.
Yeah, you're breaking up, Larry. Thanks for the call. So the mom is where?
I don't know. I mean, I asked the attorney, too. I said, are the parents still together? Because both of the parents have hired Steve Greenberg. So I don't know if they're still together. I know the family works at a coffee shop near the Highland
Park train
station.
The father owns a deli shop. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And he ran for mayor, folks, in Highland Park
in
2019.
Right. Yeah.
Anybody, like, what was his?
Well, I just find it strains the bounds of credulity to believe that the two men, his father and his uncle, were completely oblivious to anything going on, knowing what happened in 2019.
And he was still in contact with his mom because after the shooting and after he dropped the weapon behind the Ross Dress for Less store, he went to his mom's house and borrowed a car. And he drove to Madison, Wisconsin, then he drove back and during that 8 hours.
Yeah. By the way, just FYI, in terms of the cheap politics being played by Governor Jellybelly here, as well as this buffoon that Lake County has made their state's attorney.
Oh, yeah.
This guy Reinhart.
Oh, yeah. He used his moment in the sun yesterday to push his political agenda, and the crowd loved it.
But separate from these red flag laws, which are very powerful in Illinois, we should also ban assault weapons in Illinois and beyond.
Yeah. Well, Eric, Mr. State's Attorney.
Just tell us what the charges are, buddy. God.
Eric, Mr. State's Attorney, Counselor. Highland Park has a 2013 ordinance that bans assault weapons. Pursuant to the home rule powers of the city, in order to protect both the home rule authority of the city and the public safety and welfare, the city desires to amend Chapter 134 of the city code to prohibit the manufacture, sale, ownership, acquisition, or possession of assault weapons within the city.
And he lives in Highland Park, because he said that during the press conference, he and his children. This happened in their backyard.
The Highland Park ordinance passed after the Heller decision was handed down by the Supreme Court. So what else you got? You want to ban a selected number of rifles at the state level in Illinois? Yeah, okay. And then what? What do you got? What do you have to say about law enforcement agencies? What do you have to say about family? What do you have to say about drug use, since you and your party, and many Republicans too, are such enthusiastic celebrants of marijuana usage? This guy was a isolated stoner, as characterized by his friends, people that actually were paying attention to him, it would appear. Dope that is 5x the power of the marijuana that your parents or grandparents are smoking at Woodstock. Again, not causation, but correlation, because the existence of sport rifles, also not causation. We don't have causation, because these cases are so individually specific and fact-intensive. Yeah, that guy Eric Reinhardt is an embarrassment, like our governor, and like people who think, clap along, that they're doing something important by virtue signaling away, attempting to virtue signal away a serious, complicated, cultural problem with young men in this country. You're not doing anything except the clowning yourself and patting yourself on the back. I'm serious. I'm doing something. Well, I'll tell you what, you're doing nothing. And what happened in Highland Park, as has happened in so many other places around this country, with something as horrific as that sort of mass shooting, indiscriminate killing of people, it's going to happen again. And you're going to say the same things, and we're going to get nowhere. Will and Skokie.
Good morning. I'm just reading a quote here. He had that suicide attempt, and he had that he was going to kill his family. That took all the knives and swords away. Well, the state police at the time of the incident, the suspect did not have a FOID card, nor was he had a pending FOID card application. Well, quite frankly, why the heck wasn't this stuff reported to the state and to the federal database?
It was reported.
It should have been.
Well, it was. Well,
and what I'm trying to say here is that we have the federal, the government employees on all levels who fail to follow through. We have the laws, but if the laws are not enforced and the actual bureaucrats don't do their jobs, then this stuff happens. The guy was on psychological drugs. He plus cannabis. He had all.
Do we know he was on psychiatric drugs?
Yeah, they reported the other day that he had some. He had, I think, I forget the name. It begins with a D, but it's a common drug that you give to kids who have a depression and stuff like that. That was reported yesterday. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I missed it. But okay, Will, thanks for the call. Because that's one of the questions is, was he on psychiatric drugs in addition to being apparently a heavy user of marijuana? These are important questions. In terms of the bureaucracy, the case in the Charleston church shooting, where you had a failure of the bureaucracy to complete the background check in a timely fashion and stop that shooter from obtaining weapon. So here it's a little bit more complicated, it seems to me. I know that the incident in 2019 was reported to state police, or at least that's what Lake County Major Crime said, right? You still have an issue because there were no charges filed. He was not convicted of anything.
Yeah, because the family refused to file the complaint.
I understand, but you have due process rights in this country, and we need to protect due process. And so the question becomes, and this is part of the discussion after Buffalo and Uvalde, too, is including juvenile records into the consideration for background checks, whether it's for a FOID card, which, again, we only three states have, but more likely just to purchase a firearm. Something like this where you have an incident, but you don't have charges filed. You know, that I know people want to say, well, the state police fell down on the job. Well, you're accused of something. You're not arrested. You're not charged. Thus, you're not convicted of anything. So if you're accused of something, then they should make a judgment call about restricting your individual Second Amendment right. That's the sort of Monday morning quarterback you got to be careful of, it seems to me. That's not obvious. That is not without pitfalls. He wasn't accused of any. He wasn't charged with anything. He wasn't arrested. And certainly wasn't convicted of anything. He wasn't under psychiatric care, as far as we know. Complicated.
And frustrating.
And frustrating. Chuck in Delavan, Wisconsin.
Hey, Biden went to Buffalo the next day. Harris went to Highland Park the next day. Everybody up here in Wisconsin, there was a known racist that drove a red SUV and hit 49 people and killed 7 dancing grandmothers. We want to know when the administration up here, we talk about it. Want to know when they're going to come up and say, oh, my gosh, and console these people that lost all their families, too. Very, very discriminatory. It doesn't fit the narrative for these Democrats. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chuck.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
I appreciate your program. It's the best in the morning in Chicago.
On AM 560.
I just heard the most sane 60 seconds of analysis I've ever heard on this issue. So,
thank you.
Well done, brother.
The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I was mentioning earlier in the program, I had drinks with a friend of mine who's the executive director of a prominent social service provider in the city of Chicago, and he's on the left.
Yeah.
And we were talking about, obviously, what happened in Highland Park, violence in Chicago, some of the national political stuff, too. It's funny, I mentioned that, and like I said, man, I love, so we talked for 2 hours, hashed things around a bit. Man's relationship to God and government and all these deep philosophical conversations you have after a couple of Tito's and vodkas. Tito's and sodas.
And maybe a round of golf?
No time for golf yesterday. And I said, I've got this guy coming on the show tomorrow who's at the Reader. Because he's been sort of trolling me on social media, on Twitter, and doing some performances for these other internet cowboys that serve as his chorus. And I said, my producer told me that he's going to come on the show, but on one condition, because I invite the members of the left, card carrying members of the left, on the show all the time. I want to have
Democratic politicians on.
I'm a product of the firing line era, and I think there needs to be a lot more of that. And there's virtually no place for it now, and mostly because people are afraid to do anything but be an internet cowboy, keyboard warrior. But anyway, I told him that my friend that this guy's coming on the show from the Reader, but he's only coming on the show on the condition that he's allowed to finish his sentences without being interrupted. I love the patronizing attitude. Like, we're not going to have a substantive exchange, and it has to be tightly regulated. And if you interrupt me, I'm going to take my ball and go home. That's not how conversations work, but it's fine. I mean, I will defile myself and acquiesce to these conditions so that people can hear thought side by side, and you make your own decision as to who's making sense and who's describing the reality on the ground, particularly in Chicago and Illinois. I'm just trying to, frankly, live up to the wonderful standard that was set yesterday by our very own Mayor Triple Threat.
Acting so brazenly, have not only no respect for themselves, but they don't have respect for an institution like the police department, who men and women every single day on every watch are literally risking life and limb for our safety. The toxicity in our public discourse is a thing that I think we should all be concerned about.
Yes. She is doing a wonderful job reducing the toxicity in our political discourse, particularly as it relates, in her opinion, to the violence we see on the streets. For more on all of this, pleased to be joined by John Greenfield, who's the Streets Blog Chicago co-editor and a Chicago Reader columnist. John, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Dan. And I want to say I really appreciate you going along with the conditions for my interview. You know, I was thinking, I really don't want to have a repeat of like Sean Hannity's interview with Obama, where, you know, every time Obama started making a point, Hannity would just cut him off, which seems to be a very common right-wing talk show technique. So I just want to have like a respectful, fact-based conversation with you, and I think we'll have a good time.
Yeah, well, that's more or less what we do here until there's no other option. So let's start with what the mayor had to say, given the violence over 4th of July weekend and the endemic violence in Chicago. My characterization, I think the data bears it out. Is she striking the right tones? How do you see the situation of the violence in Chicago and the political leadership from the Lightfoots and the Foxes and even at the state level, the Pritzkers, as it pertains to violence in the city?
So are we talking about the Highland Park shooting?
Well, you can talk. I mean, I was talking about Chicago, but we can talk about both.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was talking specifically about Chicago, but we can talk about both. To pick whichever one you want.
Yeah, let's talk about Highland Park. Since that's, you know, there's like current issue. There are constant issues with violence in Chicago. But the Highland Park shooting, you know, really drew a lot of national attention because I was sort of an anomaly. It was a affluent North Shore suburb, really tragic case. So I saw a Morning Answers tweet yesterday. You guys were calling out John Fritchie for, you know, I think he said it was an automatic weapon that was used, and you guys were accusing him of spreading misinformation. You know, what I pointed out on Twitter is, like, it really doesn't matter that much whether it was a high-powered rifle, as authorities say. I think it turned out it was a semi-automatic weapon, like an AR-15-style weapon. But I don't know if you saw that account from a doctor I read about just the horrific injuries caused to the victims. You know, people were just kind of blown apart by this high-powered rifle. And I think the point is, you know, more important than, like, whether or not John Fritchie got the terminology exactly correct, which I think in the end it turned out he did. You know, it's just disgraceful that the killer was able to purchase this rifle legally. I mean, what kind of gun laws do we have? And you know the background of the guy. Like, the police came and confiscated a bunch of knives and swords from his house. Like, how the heck do we have a system where a person like that is able to buy, you know, such a horrible weapon?
So, well, because his dad, really his dad showed, signed.
Am I allowed to finish?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sentence?
Yes, I forgot about that.
I'm about to wrap up.
Okay.
The Highland Park case shows that we really need to, you know, it's really urgent for us to pass common sense gun regulations, such as banning assault rifles and having universal background checks. So I hope this tragic case makes a difference for getting that done.
Well, just so you know, in Illinois, which I'm sure you know, you have to be 21 to get a FOID card. So his dad, knowing what he did 3 months earlier, signed for him, sponsored him to get his FOID card. So do you think the parents should be held accountable?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, his dad he ran for mayor of Highland Park. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously the parents are, his father should never have let him get a FOID card considering the guy's troubled past. He threatened suicide. Like I said, the police confiscated weapons from his house. So, you know, obviously a lot of mistakes were made here that contributed to this tragedy.
Well, what about Chicago, though? I mean, folding this in, I mean, you can talk about mass shootings. And if you want to ban semi-automatic weapons, that's a position to take. That would knock out about 85% of them, including handguns, which are used in mass shootings at 2 times the rate of sport rifles. So we should ban those too, I suppose, if that's what you think the solution is. But also now fold in Chicago, because I know Chicago is plagued with violence for many generations. It seems to be spiking over the last couple of years in particular. And just because that's been a long-running problem doesn't mean that it should be ignored, and I'm not suggesting you're saying it should be ignored. I'm just saying I get Highland Park and why it's different and why it's anomalous, but also Chicago. And so you think, what is it that you think needs to be done differently than has been tried in Chicago, if anything?
Well, I pointed out in a post yesterday, one of our reporters for Streets Blog took the Metro to Highland Park the afternoon after the tragedy and discussed what that was like. And so I wrote a little introduction to that, just pointing out, like, you know, on the same day that there was this high-profile shooting in Highland Park, a wealthy community, there was also a mass shooting in, I think it's called Parkway Gardens, a neighborhood. The location was two blocks south of the King Drive Green Line station. And a teen and four adults were injured. Luckily, they weren't seriously injured. They were like leg wounds, or at least not critically injured. So, you know, it just shows that the gun violence epidemic is something that affects people from all walks of life and all kinds of communities. And, you know, part of the problem with Chicago's gun violence epidemic is that we are surrounded by states that have lax gun rules, and which makes it relatively easy for people who shouldn't be able to buy guns to buy guns and then bring them into our city. So if we had federal guidelines that made it tougher for people with criminal backgrounds or other issues like mental health issues that should keep them from having guns, that would keep Chicago and the rest of Illinois safer.
Yeah, well, you have Supreme Court jurisprudence on this now, including the New York gun case. And that's not going to change. You're not going to change this from being an individual right codified into codified by the Supreme Court. And so what do you want to do in a country with 400 million guns in circulation and in a country where the Second Amendment has been determined to be an individual right and people have a right to protect themselves inside and outside of their homes, as, again, was decreed by the Supreme Court. So now that's the situation. So what do you want to do? You just want to, it seems to me that so many on the left just want to wish away these items, meaning firearms, and you can't do it. That's not what's going to happen. So now you have to plant your feet firmly on the ground and say, what are we going to do with the reality on the ground that we have? And you're suggesting nothing different than what we're doing, except wish we could ban guns from existence.
All right. Well, first I should say, I mean, as you know, I'm a transportation reporter, write about a couple other things too. But so gun policy is really not my wheelhouse. This is something I tweeted about a little bit lately. But, you know, we should probably wrap up this aspect of the conversation. But I'll just say that, you know, it seems like they're doing good things in Canada. Like Justin Trudeau just introduced a buyback for, I think, automatic weapons. Don't quote me on that. But they basically are seeing the United States as a cautionary tale of what happens if you let gun violence get out of control, and they're trying to stop it in advance. One other thing I'll say is a really encouraging trend in the wake of Uvalde is that even people on the right are starting to see, like, things are nuts. Like, we just keep having so many mass shootings, like all different types of communities, from Buffalo to Uvalde to Laguna, California, you know, all different kinds of reasons, mental health issues, political differences, racial hatred. But, you know, the one thing these have in common is that the wrong people are getting guns in their hands. So even a right-wing guy like Mitch McConnell understands that we got to take action. So it's really been encouraging to see some people from the Republican Party, like, acting responsible on gun policy and realizing, you know, we gotta do something about this violence epidemic. So Dan, you know, the reason you and I are in contact is because I recently pointed out on Twitter that you are an Illinois political operative, a person who helps run news outlets in Illinois that advance the narrative of the Republican Party. And according to a recent Tribune article, you actually live in Naples, Florida. You don't even live in Illinois. Can you tell me is that accurate? Is your main residence in Florida, but you're doing all this political work in Illinois?
So first on the gun issue, because I know you wanted to wrap that up, but I get to comment.
Sure.
if you'll allow me to comment on my show.
Sure.
I mean, talking about Trudeau and freezing gun sales, Well, we have a constitution in this country. We've just talked about Supreme Court jurisprudence. You don't get to do that by executive fiat if you're Biden or anybody else. And so, I mean, the comparison to Canada it shows you should really stick to transportation policy. As opposed to, on the matter of Naples, I mean, I know you thought this was like some big reveal. Yeah, I have a place in Naples. Talk about it on this show.
You do your show from there a lot.
I do my show from there. I have we built out a little studio down there. I mean, see, the thing, John, is I hide out in the open. There's no reveals to be revealed. So, yeah, and I changed my residency effective last year to Naples,
but
Florida.
But you still have a place here.
Even though I still have a condo at Lake Point Tower, to be very specific, in the city of Chicago. You know, and I've lived in the city of Chicago for, I don't know, 20 years. I've been in Illinois for 49. So I don't even understand the point. Is 49 years not enough of a probationary period to be active in politics or to comment on what's happening in Chicago or Illinois? I do know a little bit about this city and the state. I did run for governor in 2010. I've been here and those is with respect to what I've just described. So, I mean, the fact that I, like so many people, have fled this state, even though we maintain a place here or we like to come back because we have family and friends and things that we like to do. And we still love the city, even though it's become, unsafe and unattractive. The bigger question, perhaps, I would ask you is, why do you think people like me and so many others who otherwise love the city, have family here, and I do in the western suburbs, never thought I would be a Florida resident, now find ourselves doing exactly that? Maybe that's something that the left, since you dominate the city and the state, would like to contemplate and comment on, the mass exodus of this state, 20 years running, uninterrupted, losing population. And you see it with our census remaps. You see it with the remaps and the loss of congressional districts. So it's indisputable. Maybe there's something to comment on there, what the political class and the city and the state, including a lot of surrender Republicans, have done to the city and state to make it so unattractive that people are fleeing.
Okay. Well, Dan, I will answer your question about the state, your statement that people are fleeing Illinois. I just wanted to fact check one statement you made there. You said Illinois lost population in the recent census. It's true that the census originally stated that Illinois lost population. So unfortunately, we lost a congressional seat over that. However, the census recently revealed that they miscounted.
It's not true.
Illinois actually gained population in the last census. But let's go back and discuss a few of your statements. Well, first of all, let me ask you, are you currently in Naples or are you in Illinois?
I'm in Chicago, standing next to Amy Jacobson. You want to come out for coffee?
Sure.
Okay.
Good to meet you in person.
I mean, do you have a tracker on me? I mean, would you like me to?
No, that's why I asked.
Would you want to ping me on my phone so you can follow me around? I'm going to Elmer's Cigar House after this. If you'd like to join me for a smoke, go ahead.
About how much of your time do you spend in Florida and how much do you spend in Illinois?
Are you writing my unauthorized biography?
Ha ha!
I spend enough time to be a Florida resident as of last year. That's how much time.
I don't think.
Where are you registered to vote?
Since I'm a resident of Florida, I'm registered to vote in Florida.
Okay, so my question for you, and you know what sort of got me on the topic of where you live and where you vote, is, you know, you may have seen I've written a few articles about John Cass, the right-wing commentator who used to write for the Tribune.
Right.
And so I recently found out, you know, John, he has a website nowadays. He has a blog. And most of what he writes about is, like, what Chicago should be doing, what Chicago and Illinois politicians are doing wrong, you know, armchair quarterbacking J.B. Pritzker and Lori Lightfoot and other Illinois politicians. And so it turns out that Cass doesn't even live in Illinois. He lives in a town of about 21,000 people in northwest Indiana called St. John. Now, I know some people consider northwest Indiana to be part of Chicagoland. St. John really does not seem to have much to do with Chicago, though it's surrounded on three sides by farmland. The town is 85% white. You know, so it just kind of, I want to raise the question, like, is it valid for people like you and John Cass, who don't even live in our state, who can't vote here, to have so much influence on Illinois politics. I mean, and you in particular, because John Cass, you know, anybody, it's a free country. Anybody can say what they want. You know, some guy, you know, John Cass had a guy from Texas opining on Illinois politics recently. But I think the ethical questions are a little more pronounced in your case, because you are a Naples, Florida resident. You do, you're registered to vote there. It sounds like you live most of your, you spend most of your time there. When you're not hanging out with Alice Cooper in Lake Point Towers.
Yeah, right. Rocking it.
Does he sell the condo there?
No, I don't think so. I think he got out like everybody else.
What
which
about
is sort
Oprah
of the point.
Jerry Springer?
Hey, John, honestly, we're up again. I'm not cutting you off. We're up against the hour. So we're going to have to continue this conversation and the ethical questions you raised. I'm happy to do that. But I do appreciate you coming on. He's John Greenfield, Streets Blog Chicago co-editor and reader columnist. John, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you, the fair treatment on the show.
All right. Thank you so much. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro ants line. Thanks also to our technical producer. What's his name? Justin Kosick. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Also, Illinois resident.
Yeah. And I want to make
sure.
We
need to disclose these things now. Quinn McCarthy, Illinois resident.
Chicago
Mike Scott,
resident
Illinois
too.
Resident. Amy Jacobson, Illinois resident.
Thank you.
I'm the only one with these ethical clouds over my head.
You naughty boy. I think he's obsessed with you.
We didn't even have time to get into all that. John Cass, boy, he's tracking everybody.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.